Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The McNeil and Parkin Show. Afternoons on the Score.
How about this ground game, and in particular, Mostert for the 49ers?
Well, we've seen all the different ways that they can run the football. I thought it was interesting in visiting with Kyle Shanahan, and he talked about his whole life growing up. He heard his dad, Mike Shanahan, talk about the zone running game, and Alex Gibbs, their longtime offensive line coach, say, just commit to the outside zone running game. Commit to the outside zone running game. And of course, that's a big part of this run scheme. But he started tinkering with different things, and we see all the different things that they're able to do within it, and it has been awfully good.
The McNeil and Parkin Show on 670 The Score.
That's Troy Aikman and Joe Buck from the Niners' demolition of the Packers last week. And I love watching that run game and talking about that running game, Dan McNeil. It is so cool what they do. And on the line is Radio.com Sports NFL Insider Ross Tucker. Insider calls are brought to you by Indeed. Post a job today at Indeed.com/hire. Catch Ross every weekday on Home and Home. His new show out now on Radio.com/home or search Home on the Radio.com app. And I've had the chance to host that thing a couple times with Ross Tucker and really enjoyed it. Ross, welcome to the show. How you doing, man?
Matt, I'm fantastic. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Me and Dan McNeil here with you. And I got to tell you, the way you described it, describe for Mac, if you would, and the listeners, what it is, what the players feel and about being in that offense, that Broncos offense, which is now the Niners offense, to a point. Because I remember you told me that you had talked to a guy at like every level who enjoyed and wanted to be in that offense, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, every position. You know, I know guys that played in that offense, whether it was with the Houston Texans, like Owen Daniels as a tight end, or Sage Rosenfels as a quarterback, Eric Winston as an offensive tackle. Other times when they were in Washington or Atlanta, I've talked to some of the receivers there. And what's funny is, like, they'll all say to you privately, one-on-one, It's just a really good offense for my position. It's just it's the best offense for a tackle. It's the best offense for a tight end. It's really the best offense for a wide receiver. It's the best offense you could be in for a running back. It's the best offense for a quarterback, according to – like, that's every position, dude. Like, that's all of them. You know what I mean? Like, if I've had at least one guy at every position tell me that it's the best offense they ever played in for that position, their position, that's a pretty good sign. I mean, like, every guy thinks the offense is designed for their position and it makes their position and their job easier. That's real good.
Ross, good to talk with you. Always enjoy hearing your work, and I'm glad you were available to us today. I got some friends over the weekend who say, you know, how can you like this San Francisco 49ers football? It's been an hour and a half since Jimmy Garoppolo has thrown a pass. And I say, well, Nintendo football is fun, too, when it's done well, but I would describe the 49ers as artful bullies. I think it's amazing what they do, and I think it's fun.
I love that description of it. And look, you're talking to a former NFL offensive lineman. Like, I love the Niners. I mean, you know, you want to believe with all of the passing league and Patrick Mahomes and all the receivers and everything, it's still nice to see. And the Tennessee Titans did this to some extent too, and I guess the Baltimore Ravens in their own way, but it's still nice to see that blocking people and doing it very effectively, that never goes out of style. That'll never get old, figuring out a way to block people, create holes in the running game, move people. That will never go away. I mean, that's what Red Grange was doing there in Chicago 100 years ago or whatever, and it's never going to go away. I love it. I was on the sideline Sunday for Westwood One, and I got to tell you guys, I can't ever remember an NFL game like that. You know, every time they handed the ball to Mostert, the whole crowd like stood up, and even on the sideline, it looked like he was going to break each one. I mean, each one was like, oh, wait, there you go. Oh, Savage just grabbed his ankle. Oh, he's going to take that. Oh, Jair Alexander tackled. Like, it literally was safeties and corners making last gasp tackles. Otherwise, it would have been touchdown run after touchdown. It was like a high school game. I mean, it was really crazy. And I think the biggest reason for it, and I like that you guys played that Troy Aikman sound coming back, because it's so much more now than just the outside zone Shanahan stuff. I mean, the inside trap on third and eight, so many of the gap scheme stuff they're doing. What I think, though, is what makes it so effective is Kyle Juszczyk, the fullback, and George Kittle, the tight end. Because what happens is, you know, most teams don't even have a fullback. And most teams, even if they do have a tight end, they run away from that guy rather than to him because they're usually not that great of a blocker, right? The Niners are different. They have a fullback in almost every play, and they run to the tight end almost every play. And so what happens is the outside backers, the safeties, they're just not used to taking on those kind of blocks from tight ends and fullbacks at the point of attack. And oh, by the way, those two guys are probably the best in the NFL at their position. And so I think that's as big a reason why they were able to get the edge as often as they did, is because teams are unfamiliar and uncomfortable taking on those blocks in space. And the Niners have the two best guys in the league at doing it.
I'm glad you mentioned the different things that they do in addition, Ross, because it's like I like to think about those Broncos teams and Olandis Gary getting 1,000 yards. And then
Mike Anderson out of Utah.
Mike Anderson and then Terrell Davis, then just anybody, you know. But it's not just that. So what other lineages are we seeing? What other, you know, organizations are we seeing vestiges of, or offensive schemes are we seeing references to within what San Francisco does running the ball?
Pretty much everything. I think it's maybe the most diverse and greatest volume run game I think I've ever seen, because they still do the outside zone stuff and they've mastered it. They still do it very well, like the Broncos and the teams of those eras. But then they come back with an inside trap. They'll come back with a power scheme. They'll do inside zone, you know, not just always wide zone. Sometimes it's inside zone as well. And they've got it all in there. So the things that you typically think, okay, we can do this defensively against outside zone, this is our best bet. Well, if Kyle Shanahan sees that that is what you are doing, he's going to come back then the other way and have a gap scheme or have some type of predetermined hole that he knows is effective against the way you're trying to combat his outside zone stuff. Plus, and this isn't like anything else, but you know, their pass plays in most of that game were like the Deebo Samuel reverses, because they got everybody flowing one way. And I love how Juszczyk leads the one way, puts his foot in the ground, comes underneath the formation, and then he leads Deebo Samuel on the edge. I mean, how many times? They must have run it 3 or 4 times, and the Packers would have one dude out there, the last guy left that wasn't chasing the front side run. Juszczyk would eliminate him, and Deebo Samuel would get a bunch of yards. I mean, I don't think they needed to. They did not need to throw the ball once that entire game. And that's like my dream. Like, my dream as an offensive lineman. Like, can you imagine the Super Bowl if they just, like, didn't throw? Like, that's not going to happen, but that would be unbelievable.
Yeah. Bears coach Matt Nagy would turn his TV off. Ross Tucker, radio.com. NFL offensive lineman of the past with us on the Alpamonte Ford hotline. Alpamonte Ford is in Melrose Park. I don't know if you've thought about this, Ross, but I wonder if you might feel, come Sunday afternoon, a little bit of a kindredship with Raheem Mostert. You don't think about championships in the off season because you know in July and August you're going to be scratching and clawing and fighting to make a roster spot. You played on 6 teams in 7 years. He is potentially a week and a half away from being a Super Bowl MVP if he were to repeat what he did last week.
Yeah, I mean, again, you guys, this is why I love the Niners, right? So I do Eagles preseason TV. I do Eagles pregame. So I root for the Eagles because the further they go, the more money I get, right? But I have adopted the 49ers as my other team. They are my West Coast team because I love the way they run the ball. They had anchor steam on ice in the press box after the game, which is unbelievable. That's a huge positive. Anchor steam beer. And because of guys like Mostert, I love stories like that. You know, I mean, you mentioned it, 5 teams, 7 years, cut 4 times, traded once. I love when a guy like that gets an opportunity, makes the most of it. I interviewed him right after the game. Seems like a great young man. And I just think there are more guys in the NFL like that than people realize, but they just never really got a true opportunity. You know, running back's tough, right? I mean, the teams he was on, you know, when he was trying to make the Eagles, like they had LeSean McCoy, they had a second-round pick. So then you're competing with one other guy for that third running back spot who probably already has some experience, special teams, so they go with him, and maybe most is not as good at it. Like, it is hard to make a roster. Like, it is hard. And then even if you do, it's hard to be the guy that actually gets playing time. You usually need somebody ahead of you to get hurt. I mean, the only reason why I last as long as I did is I think my first 3 years or second, third, and fourth year, a guy ahead of me got hurt, and I played well the rest of the year when I was in there, and then they kept me, and I was able to stick around. Mostert now, hopefully, will have, you know, another 3 or 4 years of his career. He showed he is legit. And that's the thing that's cool about the Niners. Like, even the other guys that you haven't heard of, like Breida had, like, the fastest GPS time of any player the whole year. Mostert ran a 4.3. Like, I think the Niners are like, you know what? Just give me a dude that's fast as all get out, that has made no money, and if I tell him to run it there, he's going to run it there as hard as he freaking can, and he's going to – because Mostert was hitting that thing. I mean, it was – you know, I almost feel like – I'm surprised the Niners even got Tevin Coleman, because it's like the Niners like guys that are fast and poor. That's who they like to get as running back.
It makes a lot of sense. I mean, I saw a stat at one point, the most runs of 10 yards or more in the league, and two of the top five were Mostert and Breida. That tells you something right there. It's like those guys get their chance and they bust through. All right, so what would you say, Max? Six teams in 5 years or something like that?
I thought it was 6 teams in 7 years.
Six and seven.
Five teams, 7 years, Redskins twice. That's what threw you off.
Yes.
The Redskins. Finished with the Redskins.
Gotcha.
I almost signed with Atlanta that year. Hugh Jackson was the officer. It was almost 6 teams in 7 years. But, yes, 5 teams in 7 years. I will say this, though. I think for Bears fans, on some level, I think the Niners should be the team you root for and give you some hope, right? Like, and I think this is for most of the NFL because Mahomes is like a winning lottery ticket, right? Like, the guy's unbelievable. You know, the chances that your team has Mahomes, I know it's a sore subject for you guys there, but the chances that your team has Mahomes or drafts Mahomes, not real good. But, like, I feel like a lot of teams can feel like their quarterback can play as well as Jimmy did this year, and that maybe if you get one more O lineman or a better blocking tight end or one more D lineman or a new coach. Like, I feel like the Niners are almost an attainable goal for people.
Well, here's the thing. Here's the problem. And Mac alluded to it earlier in the interview. Matt Nagy philosophically doesn't believe in this whole running the ball thing that seems to be still important in the game. Like, and my contention, Ross, is that this team, their problem with running the ball was not personnel, was not even scheme as much as it was the head coach's unwillingness to truly believe in it as something you need to do. And I feel like the entire offensive line was catching rather than getting out there and charging.
Yeah, I agree with what Spiegs just said, Ross, but I think it's also in the general manager's lap because there's no McGlinchey. There's no Staley. The Bears don't prioritize those positions in the draft, and when they rarely do, they swing and miss.
Well, they were driving me crazy with flip-flop and white hair and James Daniels. Like, that is not conducive to success. Like, that stuff like that really bothers me. I don't know the reasoning for it. I will tell you about Nagy. He gets it honestly. I mean, he came up through Andy Reid.
Yeah.
You know, Andy Reid, the criticism always in Philadelphia was that he didn't run the ball enough. There's been criticism in Kansas City that he doesn't run the ball enough. That's where Nagy came from. Well, guess what? They got Patrick Mahomes, and they got, like, the three fastest dudes I've ever seen in my life, okay? So it works. You know, throwing the ball works when you've got Mahomes and receivers like that. But my point is, that's Nagy's background. That's what he knows. And obviously, he was a quarterback himself, but that's what he knows. The problem is, you know, with Trubisky, I don't think you have a quarterback that you can make the focal point of the offense. I think that they, deep down, they know that, even though he played a little bit better later in the year. I think that they know that. But, you know, old habits die hard. Andy Reid had McNabb, you know, then he had Vic, and then obviously was able to go to Kansas City and have Alex Smith. I mean, he's always had really good quarterbacks. Andy hasn't had to deal with a quarterback who's probably an average player like Trubisky. So I would think that Nagy, if he's smart, is probably going to adjust that a little bit and try to run the ball a little bit more. But again, you're right. I don't think they don't have the blocking tight end. I don't even know if they have a fullback. And they surely don't have the line that the Niners do.
Well, what you just said, if he's smart, it's like, I understand the conundrum as I perceive it anyway. You go 12-4, you're coach of the year. Of course you want to show the world the full offensive package. You want to show them everything you can do. But at some point you got to look down and realize, oh, wait, I don't have the quarterback to do that. So let's adjust and win. And that's a hard thing for a person to do, whether you're a head coach or not, to adjust from your vision to actually working with what you have. That's a difficult thing that Matt Nagy has to do.
But Speaks, here's what, the only issue I would say is, like, I don't picture the Bears being able to run the ball down people's throats. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I'm with you on that, and I think Trubisky, you know, he's dealing with a quarterback that's not one of the top 20 quarterbacks in the NFL. Really tough to win with a quarterback that's not one of the 20 best. I do, though, wonder if, you know, Trubisky could play at an almost Garoppolo level or at a Garoppolo level if he had the other pieces around him. But what you said is why I love Kyle Shanahan. You know, most coaches, and I'm not talking about Nagy in particular, but most coaches, they want to show you, you know, that they're a genius, that they're a guru, and they run this play and run that play. And I got Kyle Shanahan will just keep calling the same play 10 times in a row if you can't stop it. Mm-hmm. Like, he has no ego about, I got to show you all these fancy plays I drew up.
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm just going to send Kyle Juszczyk and George Kittle to the edge. They're going to kill your safety and outside linebacker. We're going to get a bunch of yards and win, and people will give me the credit for that. I don't need to be credit for a genius.
Ross, last thing I've got for you. I like to watch the big guys. I love watching great pass rushers. And Nick Bosa, man, I tell me, as a former offensive lineman, if I'm wrong here, but this guy's first step is absolutely from another world, and he's got a series of moves. I mean, a full arsenal of pass rush moves. He is so active with his hands, and I struggle to believe he's a 22-year-old kid sometimes in his first year in the NFL. Are you does your jaw drop as much as mine does when I watch this guy play?
Yeah, I think I tweeted during the game at Ross Tucker NFL that he is the most technically advanced rookie defensive lineman I think I've ever seen. I you know, he's got a good first step, but what jumps out to me is just how good he is with his hands. I mean, he, in the run game, his hands are inside. He's locking out. And when he goes to rush the passer, he's got a bunch of different moves. He can go with power. He can go, I mean, whoever coached him, you know, whether it was his dad growing up, because his brother's the same way,
yep,
or high school. Certainly Larry Johnson, the D-line coach at Ohio State, is excellent. I think that's a big factor, too, because his brother and even Chase Young coming out this year. I am so impressed. I used to love going against rookies because basically they had, like, no moves, or maybe one move, but you could tell what it was right away and you wouldn't let them beat you. That usually they're just able to win in college because they're bigger, faster, stronger, whatever. But Bosa, he plays like an 8 to 10 year vet. Like, that's how advanced his hands are. You can tell he's worked on it over and over and over. And that's why he wins more than any other. I don't think he is. I think there's a lot of DNs, I'll put it this way, in the league that are more gifted physically than him. But he's just about as good as anybody. And he's the best carpenter, the best plumber, you know, the best craftsman in the bunch already.
It's nice to be in the family business, like Kyle, you know? you grow up learning from the folks older than you. Ross, a pleasure, man. Thanks so much for the time. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Ross.
Absolutely. See you, dudes.
Take care.
That's Ross Tucker. That was Radio.com Sports NFL Insider Ross Tucker. Insider calls are brought to you by Indeed. Post a job today at Indeed.com/hire. Catch Ross every weekday on Home and Home. His new show out now on Radio.com/home or search Home on the Radio.com app.
I've heard him on – I think that might be only the second time I've talked to him. Really enjoyed that in-depth 49ers football. He sounds like he's ready to be fitted for a championship ring himself. Well, he really likes him, doesn't he?
That's the thing about that dude. It's just he's so passionate. He legit loves it. And you can tell he's on the sidelines just watching every play like, they're going to break this one. They're going to break that one. He's got the zeal of a kid when it comes to football.
And he sounds like Tommy Chong every now and again. So it's a double win. A birthday celebration in a bit. Top of the 4 o'clock hour. Joe Buck from Fox, who will call Super Bowl 54, will join us. Spiegs is in for Parkins. I'm Mac, and you're listening to The Score.
Homered! The Cubs win the game!
Everybody in the ballpark is standing up. Watch it. There's a drive on the line to left field. Come on, Moose! He did it! He did it! Moran made a fabulous catch! It's a no-hitter! A no-hitter! And what a catch that Moran made! Oh, brother, what a catch he made!
Jarvis fires away. Fly ball, deep to left. Back! That's it!
Hey! He did it! Ernie Banks got number 500.
Happy birthday to me.
Hello, Lucy.
Happy birthday to me and to you.
Happy birthday posthumously to a guy who was the first sports broadcaster in this town of importance, Jack Brickhouse. Born on this day in 1916 in Peoria, he passed 20 years plus ago. He was a salesman. He got people excited about the game. He was a Cubs optimist even when there wasn't a reason to be one. Any old kind of run will do it when they hadn't put a ball in play in three innings. Jack was just terrific and well-rounded, too. He not only did the Cubs, he did the Bears, he did the White Sox for several years before he moved to the North Side years later. He would anchor the sportscasts on the Channel 9 News in an era when there were only 6 or 7 stations in town, very few options. And it was just an absolute thrill for me to get a chance to sit down in the studio with him many years ago when this radio station was first launched with Terry Boards and have him tell great stories about his days as the Bears broadcaster in Green Bay. My favorite was when knocks on the hotel door and he answers and it's a bunch of Bears fans and they want to party with Brick. And he stayed up until 6 o'clock in the morning with Bears fans and barely got any sleep and partied until the sun came up. And he was just terrific. He was the guy who coined the phrase "the friendly confines." That's Jack Brickhouse, and his enthusiasm for what he did was unrivaled in that era. You guys, the guys on the other side, Shep's thinking, really, the first important sportscaster?
Yeah, I wrapped my head around that one myself.
I think so, and not just because he's the first I remember. There were some popular broadcasters in the Cubs booth. Jack Quinlan was one of them, but they didn't possess the staying power Brickhouse did, and. Man, for to get a response even from that guy when I was a 9-year-old, desirous of writing a better book than Jerome Holtzman wrote about Billy Williams, Jack wrote me back to write the introduction for the book and encouraged me to do what I chose to do was just a thrill. And happy birthday. I'm sure he's raising a glass if there's a heaven.
That's awesome.
Hey!
Well, if there's a heaven is kind
if,
of a...
If there's a heaven, I'd like to think Brick is probably five or six drinks in this afternoon. Bernsey tells a great story about when Brick showed up in Rockford. I think it was in Rockford to do a game, and just in the bag at 5 o'clock in the afternoon.
Just filling in a couple of blanks, you gave a tremendous resume there. I didn't realize he did Bulls games too.
Yes, he did.
66 to 73.
Hawks as well. He did some work with the Hawks.
That he did White Sox and Cubs simultaneously for decades. From 1948 to 1967, he did both teams. Did both teams until 67. And then because they rarely played in town on the same day, he stopped doing that and did only Cubs after that. But also, he called the Rose Bowl in 1952. The College Football Rose Bowl. He's the guy calling the Willie Mays catch in the 1954 World Series, along with Russ Hodges. So it's like all of this stuff on the Brick House resume is massive. I think you're probably right about first broadcaster of import and renown.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I mean, probably he sold tickets. I mean, kids, adults alike, everybody was very, very, you come home from school, you run home and turn on the Cubs, and there's Brick, and Ernie Banks is facing Pat Jarvis on that day, and they're looking for his 500th home run.
Was he bitter? Did he end up bitter at Harry Carey's legacy and presence and import in his wake?
I don't think so. Harry had wars with a lot of people, most notably Milo Hamilton. When Carey passed away, I don't remember who it was, this ran in the papers. Somebody contacted Milo Hamilton at the time he was doing Milo. The Astros game.
Not happy.
And he, you know, not knowing there was history, he says, I don't do a good Milo Hamilton, so just to me, if you called for, you know, a nice flowery eulogy about Harry Carey, you've called the wrong guy.
So, hello, you've called the wrong number. I'm not here to say nice things about Harry.
I love Jack Brickhouse.
There you go.
Yes, I know Jack Quinlan died in a car crash. That's why he didn't have staying power. I was trying to be gentle and not be real, you know, just bring it, just darkness on the topic.
I got to tell you, it was a terrific dissertation by you. You piqued my interest at the beginning with the first important broadcaster, and then at the end with if there's a heaven.
If there's a heaven.
It's kind of a big why left not? Turn.
Well, I don't know if there is. I don't know. I don't. I mean, I want to believe there is, and then
go ahead and believe it then. I mean, who's anybody to tell you that there is or there isn't? You believe what you want, for God's sake. I believed when I went to Sedona, Arizona, and I walked around a labyrinth, and then had mindful meditation in the middle, holding a specific little stone that they told me to hold. I felt like I learned something spiritually about myself.
It was Stone you were holding.
I could be completely full of crap, but I believe it. Damn it.
The Red Rocks will give you spiritual experiences. Yeah, when you go in some place that's just naturally beauty, it's hard to question the existence of God. And then you think about science.
Well, there is that pesky science. But I'm standing on the beach in the Bahamas doing some meditating and some yoga with my wife.
I just
literally yesterday morning. And how is there not a God? Look how gorgeous this is. Who did this? Somebody did this.
I totally get that sentiment. Yeah. But I guess
that doesn't predicate a heaven or a hell existence.
Right, but anything that's predicated on fear, when you grow up and realize that you either believe in God or you burn in hell eternally. You know, okay, I'm in. Where do I sign up for this?
That feels a bit threatening.
Easy, Aaron Rodgers.
No kidding.
Did you guys see that today? His family is very upset. He made similar comments on the Danica Patrick podcast.
Oh, really?
About religion and
So is that the key, one of the keys to that familial breakdown?
Big part, yes.
In the Rodgers family? I thought maybe one of the keys was that he was just a jackass of epic proportions, which he appears to be.
Well, his brother called him out for having no interest in checking on mom and dad, right? When there were wildfires, I think. Was that what it was?
Yeah.
Hey, he sent a donation to one of the charities, but he didn't even send mom a text.
Man. It's quite something, isn't it?
If there's a heaven, son, she ain't in it. The Town. I cannot get through a day without quoting the movie The Town, directed by Ben Affleck
ten years or so ago. That's the one for you. How good is Jeremy Renner in that movie?
That's when I fell in love with Jeremy Renner.
He's the best.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just got him tuned up a little bit there, yeah. Have you seen any good movies lately?
Yes.
How many of the Oscar nominees have you seen? Nominations, I should say.
Just a few. I have some work to do in that regard. Just watched The Irishman, finally, which I enjoyed tremendously. Have you seen Uncut Gems? Not nominated.
Not
but,
yet. That, and oh, for dude. That, it's going to have to wait until after the Oscars.
Because you we like have, to catch up.
Yeah, I want to see all nine of them before the Oscars, which are coming up. That's on February 9th, uh-huh. So I've got five more to go. I've seen four of them.
You
got
to see Uncut Gems, especially in regards to the gambling juice that we were discussing earlier. But just in general, these brothers, the Safdie brothers, they create an atmosphere of anxiety, which is as uncomfortable as I've been watching a movie maybe ever in my life.
If you're not on board with Adam Sandler, will one have a difficult time suspending that problem for the movie?
I don't think so.
Yeah,
I
he's mean, good.
If you're not,
it's a dramatic role, for those of you who don't know.
For sure. It's a dramatic role. There's some makeup and some prosthetics in effect. But
wait a second. This is the Mike Francesa movie, right? That's what we're talking about?
It is the Mike Francesa feature. That's right. It's all of it. No, but it's the Kevin Garnett film. Yes. Kevin Garnett is amazing.
I was going to ask. Yeah, it's the one thing I haven't heard about this movie is how good or bad he is.
He's fabulous. He's completely fabulous in it. But the whole thing has this like ad-libbed, sort of just relaxed kind of, hard scrabble feel to it that he just fits right in, man.
I've seen these nominations for best film. 1917, which I strongly encourage people who like to see movies before the Oscars to go now while it's still in theaters.
Yeah, because it's a big screen one, right?
Cinematography-wise, it is as solid as any war film I've ever seen. It's right up there with Spielberg's Saving Private Ryan. Sam Mendes, who also directed American Beauty.
Yeah, it's one of your guys.
Is our director he directed 1917. Takes a while before you have a rooting interest in our main character. But
I was going to say in the war. Do you have a rooting interest in the war?
They didn't develop.
I'd be for America in the war.
That's not an American, though.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he believed in what America believed in, but gotcha. He's not American. He's British.
Yeah, screw him then.
He's British. And it's poorly titled. 1917. How about 2 days from 1917?
He's not as American as you or I.
That's right.
I have seen Parasite, which I thought was wonderfully cast and wonderfully done, but it's not my flavor, and I have no desire to see it again anytime soon.
Oh, I want to see that. I think
you'll like it.
Probably.
Yeah. I have seen Once Upon a Time in Hollywood three times.
Yeah.
And you're the groan.
I was underwhelmed. I really was.
Why?
Because I thought the pacing absolutely sucked. There's a lot of times where I'm like, why is this so slow right here?
I think that's the point.
I think it is.
That's what you wanted to achieve.
He was trying to do that. It did not work.
Make like you're there. It's a hang. Like you're living in the time.
Right.
You know.
Didn't work for me. It didn't work for me.
Yeah.
And I thought there were lots of like vignettes that worked well on their own. Like, oh, this is 20 minutes of this particular thing, but what the hell does it have to do with anything else? And it didn't really feel like it connected the way that Pulp Fiction eventually feels like it connects on every level, where those kind of things feel like they connect. This one did not connect.
Well, to me, that's a perfect movie. So that's one of my favorites. So
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood?
No, Pulp Fiction.
Oh, yeah.
So it's hard to compare anything to that.
Right, except I'm comparing Tarantino to Tarantino, which I think is fair.
It was too Tarantino for me in the final 20 minutes. I did not experience it the way you did. I thought it moved just fine, but a little too heavy-handed near the conclusion. But I became a big fan of Rick Dalton. I'm a big Rick man. You're Rick effing Dalton. I love that line. Yeah, I considered renting it a third time the other day. I've seen it. Because when you pay $17 for a movie to watch at home, I watched it twice the first time through. Then Sherry hadn't seen it, so we watched it together. And just the other night I was thinking, don't I want to throw $17 at this thing again?
Why don't you buy it? Can't you buy it?
It's not out yet.
No, but like depending on your system, you can just buy it and it comes with the extras.
Right. People who know how to do systems and have technological skills can do that. I still don't have those kind of aptitudes.
You're Rick Dalton. Don't you forget it.
I know you struggle with systems. Are you still paying for PeterNorth.com?
I've not paid for porn in at least 6 months.
.com.
It's been a long time. It's been a long time since I walked in the moonlight.
All right, good. And Lobster Tube is free.
Yeah, it absolutely is. I don't spend time on it. I was surprised so few people were aware of its existence.
Hmm.
Bottom of the hour brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. The Chicago Wolves face Manitoba on Saturday the 1st. That's next Saturday. First 2,500 fans to enter at Allstate Arena will receive an Oscar Dansk bobblehead. For tickets, visit ChicagoWolves.com. In case you're just joining us, Lori Markkanen out 4 to 6 weeks with a hip.
Yeah,
Lowry, a pelvis, I should say.
Out 4 to 6 weeks. And I think the biggest local news of the day, and it's going to make a lot of national news on the baseball front, is that a former member of the Astros has spoken about the sign-stealing stuff in a way that none of the players have. None of them.
Okay.
And he's a member of the White Sox now.
Ooh.
And he just spoke about it a little while ago.
That's a tease.
So we ought to hear that, I think.
Yeah, nicely done. We'll get to that next. Joe Buck will join us top of the 4 o'clock hour. McNeil with Speak sitting in for Danny on the Score.
It's a fair comparison because of the repertoire that they both have. It's identical to a large degree. And the velocity, 88, 89. Heck, I remember Burley when he was constantly, the number you saw most on the gun was 88. Now he might hit 91, might hit 90, but 88 was the number you saw the most. And that's kind of what Keuchel does. I love velocity too. You know, who wouldn't like? It's right. Easy to put your neck on a line for somebody throwing, oh, I like that guy. He's throwing 99. Well, what's not to like?
Don Cooper with Mully and Haw in studio earlier today comparing the newcomer Dallas Keuchel to White Sox hero of yesteryear, Mark Burley.
That makes all the sense in the world. Sinker baller, ground ball king.
Keep it on the ground in that ballpark.
I mean, and Keuchel's ground ball rate last year was absurd. Just absolutely ridiculous, and that's what he does. So that's why a lot of focus will be on the White Sox defense. But Keuchel's an interesting dude, somebody I'd love to talk to, and I bet you would enjoy him as well. When he was signed, he talked about wanting to be on these White Sox because these young cats really have it going on. Like, he's excited to be here and an interesting guy, and we'll talk to you. And apparently he talked today and said more than any other Astro or former Astro has said about the cheating that went on when they were there in terms of an apology. Like, Keuchel got closer to a full-on apology than anybody has.
First and foremost, I think apology should be, in order for if not everybody on the team. And when the stuff was going on, it was never intended to be what it's made to be right now. And I think when stuff comes out about things that happen during the course of a big league ball season, it's always blown up to the point of, oh my gosh, this has never happened before. I mean, I'm not going to go into specific detail, but during the course of the playoffs in 17, everybody was using multiple signs. I mean, for factual purposes, when there's nobody on base, when in the history of Major League Baseball has there been multiple signs? So you can go back and watch film of every team in the playoffs. There was probably 6 out of 8 teams using multiple signs. So it's just what the state of baseball was at that point in time. Was it against the rules? Yes, it was. And, I personally am sorry for what's come about, the whole situation. But it is what it is, and we got to move past that. So I never thought anything would have come like it did, and I myself am sorry, but we got to move on.
I'm sorry. Yeah. I didn't think we'd get caught.
I didn't think we'd get caught.
If I thought we'd get caught, I'd be 1,000% wrong. That's the kind of the apology, non-apology,
well,
to a degree, isn't it?
I think there was some genuine apologies in there, but there was also an I didn't think we'd get caught, and there was a pretty blatant everybody in that playoffs was stealing from everybody. Whether it's true or not, that's what he's saying. He's saying that everybody used multiple signs with nobody on base. When in the history of baseball have you seen that? He's saying that the Astros were afraid that other teams were stealing signs from them, just like they have now been confirmed of doing from others. And we don't know that to be true.
Don't you think there would have been much more of an uproar from current players or very recent players over this if they weren't? I mean, I'm starting to get the impression all 30 teams have done it. Jason Hayward last week, I asked him, I said, you embarrassed for your game? And he wouldn't go that far.
No, he would not. Yasmani Grandal, you guys talked to the day his signing was announced, the new White Sox catcher, and he said, if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying.
Right.
So, no, there's a lot of them that did. I don't think it was all 30. No way. But I think there were several organizations that have been doing it. And a lot of organizations that just thought it was, well, it's just the way that things are going. It's just how you get smarter. It's just what you do these days. But here's the thing. The commissioner sent out a memo, spring training 2017, don't do this. We have now caught you after the Apple Watch stuff. We've caught you. We got it. Don't do this. And the Astros still did it. And a couple other teams still did it. So here you go.
Amazing how well they performed with two strikes.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. That's why you're getting what you're getting. Here's a little more from Dallas Keuchel talking about the whistleblower, Mike Fiers?
Yes.
Mike Fiers.
Not Ashley Fiers.
Three no-hitters Mike Fiers has in his career. But here's Dallas Keuchel talking about Mike Fiers, whether he's a hero or not a hero, how you feel about that guy.
That's a tough subject because you're such a tight-knit community in the clubhouse and in baseball especially. You're playing 162 games at least in the regular season plus spring training and then maybe in the playoffs if you're lucky. So you're pushing 185, 200 games. And it sucks to the extent of the clubhouse rule was broken. I mean, and that's where I'll go with that. I mean, I don't really have much else to say about Mike. So that's also the other side of the equation is, hey, I know these teams are using multiple signs. What are they doing those for? So, I mean, it just happened to come out with the Astros, and like I said, there's a lot of people that are sorry in that organization, including myself for what happened. Do pitchers benefit from any of that? I mean, not really. But at the same time, we might have had a few runs more per game. In my instance, I did not. I was actually pretty mad about that. So that's kind of I didn't really enjoy that sometimes.
Wow, that's interesting. Yeah, so no, the pitchers didn't benefit from that. The pitchers had to be great on their own.
They didn't hit for Keuchel?
Apparently not. But yeah,
it's a pretty potent lineup to be pointing a finger at these last few years.
Oh, man, Mike Fiers so called out for breaking the rule of the clubhouse. You think there's any way if Mike Fiers say he just goes to the commissioner without the public pressure that comes with going to the media? If he goes to the commissioner and says, "Hey, this needs to stop." You think Rob Manfred takes it public and does all of this? No chance in hell that it ends up this cleaned up or this attempted cleanup if he doesn't go to the media. No chance in hell, in my opinion.
Probably not. I would think that's not going to be that. Well, right? Who gains?
Yeah. No, the commission doesn't want to have this out there.
Another baseball cheating scandal.
Yeah.
Your game's fraudulent, Speaks.
I know, it sucks.
I can only speak for myself, but I mean, just knowing some of those guys over there and knowing how they are as people, we're all people to an extent. I mean, some guys are robots. I mean, I'll tell you that. So, but for most of us, I mean, the human element's real. And I mean, a lot of guys are not happy with the fact that Mike came out and said something or the fact that this even happened. But at the same time, there is some sorrow in guys' voices. I have talked to guys before, and I mean, this will be going on for a long time, and I'm sure in the back of the guys' minds this will stick forever.
We're all human to an extent.
To an extent. Thank you for that, Dallas. I mean, some of us are robots. Who's a robot?
I have a feeling when this thing is done with him, the White Sox, we as White Sox fans are going to feel like they stole him for that price tag. I mean, even if he's 80% of what he once was, $55 million over 3 years is a bargain, man.
It is a terrific, terrific contract.
Got to play defense behind him, though. That's a big part of this.
I know. I wanted to ask Timmy Anderson about that. This wasn't really the format to do it necessarily.
No, but he said everything. He wants to get better at everything.
Yeah,
so,
well, that's Rick.
Yeah, and Rick Hahn yesterday said he sees that Timmy Anderson could win a Gold Glove in his career.
I think it's possible because Anderson, especially if he's a hitter.
The athleticism's there.
He's really good going to his left. And those numbers backed it up. The new StatCast numbers that came out said that Tim Anderson is really good going to his left up the middle. He's got to get better in the hole.
Got to make those routine plays for guys like Dallas Keuchel.
Right. And Javier Baez had to learn that stuff, too. Alexi Ramirez had to learn that stuff, too.
We're glad you're with us on this Friday afternoon. It is nasty out. Be patient. You'll get home, those of you listening, while you're commuting. Danny Parkins is okay. And Daniel Parkins is okay. We kind of strongly suggested take a three-day weekend. He was here Wednesday and Thursday. For those of you who did not hear, Danny and his wife, Stephanie, brought 4-pound, 7-ounce Owen into the world this past Friday afternoon, a week ago today, 9 weeks premature. Things are going about as well as they can, given all of the circumstances. Spieg's nice enough to work with me today right after getting home from his Bahamian vacation. Joe Buck from Fox is on deck. We will talk to him in just a few minutes on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
You like it? I like it.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.